On this episode of This Week in Linux, we're back. And this week's episode is jam-packed with good news. We got a new Linux kernel, new updates from LibreOffice, Nextcloud, VLC, and a bunch more. We saw some hardware announcements from the KDE and Mycroft teams, huge desktop environment releases from Mate and KDE Plasma, and a bunch more. Just, it's lots of more content and just jam-packed. I'm Michael Tennell with Tux Digital, and this is your weekly source for Linux GNUs. Up first in the news this week is Linux kernel 4.15 was released, and this includes patches for Meltdown and Spectre. There's also patches for all the other other currently supported kernels out there, so like 4.4 has support, 4.13 has support, etc. So as far as that goes, Meltdown and Spectre is mitigated in many levels. But what this particular release of the Linux kernel also adds, support for the new RISC-V architecture, which is an open source CPU architecture, which is really cool. Hopefully that picks up some more RISC-V. Is it RISC-V or RISC-V? I think it's RISC-V, actually. Anyway, if it picks up more steam, it's going to be much better for the like for computing world in general. Unfortunately, they named it RISC, which is not very good branding. They should, you know, rethink that. Anyway, also included in 4.15 is an improvement for mod setting so that you can have better supply mode setting. Better display support for AMD GPU driver for AMD graphics. You have also improved power management for like SATA link power management as well. So just improved resources and efficiency for that. We also got support for AMD secured encrypted virtualization and user mode instruction prevention, Intel security. Yeah, that just rolls off the tongue. Still, great updates, and 4.15 is I can't wait to use it, and 4.16 is already looking really cool because all the updates that are coming. Great time to use Linux, and great time to be back doing a Linux news show. We had some pretty sad news this week with John Perry Barlow, the co-founder of the EFF, died, unfortunately, and this is what the executive director of the EFF said, Cindy Cohn. It is no exaggeration to say that major parts of the internet we all know and love today exist and thrive because of Barlow's vision and leadership. He always saw the internet as a fundamental place of freedom, where voices long silenced can find an audience and people can connect with others regardless of physical distance. And I just wanted to say thank you, John, for everything you've done. And you'll be missed. This week we got the release of VLC 3.0, which is the being claimed as the biggest release ever in the history of VLC, which is pretty accurate. There's a lot of cool stuff here. They added support for HDR video, which is awesome. They've added support for 360 video, which is awesome. 360 video on your desktop is a little awkward, but it's still cool. Chromecast streaming has been added. 3D audio support. So with audio pass-through for HD audio codecs. Really cool. So you can be like a VR situation kind of structure. Like that's cool. Support for browsing a NAS drive built into the application. So like they already have like an audio library that you can, you know, browse through and stuff like that, which is really cool. And it's nice to see them add that. Activates hardware decoding by default, which is fantastic. So like GPU encoding and stuff like that. So good. And decoding, I mean. I said encoding. I meant decoding. Anyway, VLC's new release, Veterinary? I don't know. Anyway, VLC 3.0, huge update. Very happy. Yeah. LibreOffice 6.0 was released this week, and with it comes a lot of cool improvements, as well as like nice design improvements. So first, we got better file compatibility with Microsoft Office documents. That's always good. There's the design improvements, so you can have the ribbon UI. So it's not on by default. You just change it, and you can now have like a ribbon style that's similar to how Microsoft Office is made. They have the group bar, grouped bar, multiple levels of the for the ribbon is the grouped bar. You can also have a minimized ribbon UI if you want with a tabbed compact bar. They've also added some nice improvements for the UI with elementary icons. Unfortunately, they're not on by default for some reason. They still have the Tango default icons. Why? Anyway, it's glad they're making improvements. Maybe they're like doing like a gradual, slow transition so that it's not like jarring, but it needs to be jarring because the Tango icons are super old and they don't look good and you need to use elementary and fix it. Anyway, they also improved the UI for Qt display so that you can use LibreOffice on KDE Plasma much more seamless, and it doesn't look like it's off. It looks great now. They got based on my testing, they seem to have gotten rid of the terrible gradient that was in the toolbars when you used a dark theme. I could be wrong. Maybe it was just on my particular testing of that particular toolkit, but hopefully it's on all of them. Either way, you know, it's good they did a little bit. They also added EPUB support, well, exporting, where you can write a document in LibreOffice and then like write a book, like an ebook in LibreOffice and export it as directly as an EPUB file, which is fantastic. That's been needed for a while for a lot of people. They've added ability to use OpenGPG for encrypted files so you can sign documents that way. And they've just, overall, just a lot of really cool improvements, like standard compliance compatibility with PDF forms. So that's something I've been wanting for a very long time, and it's fantastic that they've added it. So LibreOffice 6.0. Nextcloud 13 was released this week, and it comes with, like, there's a lot of new interface improvements for a lot of different applications, so it's really cool that Nextcloud is getting it, better interface. But more importantly, it is way faster, like, absurdly faster. There's an 80% increase for the LDAP support. There is a 10 times faster access to external storage. That it's mainly because they used to do it in a way where they would send signals and queries to the server based on users and objects, and like it would just continuously do it. Now they do it like one time, parse it once, and then just take all the data that they collect from that one signal and then parse through it, which means that the cache that you're looking through is a lot more, like, it's like read-only type, so it's a lot faster to pull that in and make adjustments and use the functionality for it. So great job. Kind of weird that you didn't have that already, but it's fantastic that you do now, so good job on that. They added end-to-end encryption, which is something that's been needed for a while. Quick note, though, if you have files in your Nextcloud with encryption, you need to make sure that you don't change your password unless you have like a secret key set up that is associated to that password. So you can have a file, like if you do change your password, your files are not locked away because that's how they do the encryption. So, you know, quick tip about that. They've also improved the Elasticsearch, which is the quick search thing, and allows for full text search, making it even lower overhead for the server when you're doing search processes. So that's great. Now, this is cool that they added it. There's a little caveat to it, though. It's really cool. They added this thing called Nextcloud Talk. It's essentially like a Google Hangouts alternative, or like a Zoom.us or Appear.in or whatever. It's a WebRTC-based video conferencing and chat system. So it's really cool that they added this, though I tried it and it did not work for me. I don't know if it's ready in general, but maybe it was my particular configuration or something. I don't know. But it did not work. Anyway, I'm still looking forward to it, to using it when it does. Nextcloud 13. You get 2.2.0 was released, and with it is a new stable release that comes with a lot of cool features. I like to think they're cool. Just a little disclaimer, this is an application that I work on, so it is kind of self-serving, but it's a free open source application, so not really that much self-serving. Anyway, it's also fantastic. I'm completely unbiased, obviously. The new version has support for downloading. It's a download manager, if I hadn't said that. And it has support for downloading videos from YouTube and from Mega, the Mega service like mega.co.nz. So you can download files from there as well. And it has added batch downloading for up to 3 wildcards and a sequence download. And it also adds better support for Wayland. We fixed some app indicator issues. And one of the best things, that other than the YouTube support that people have wanted, the other thing that people have been wanting is a browser extension for Chrome. Well, we've added that. There's now a browser extension, and this new browser extension is turns out the Firefox 57 Quantum thing made this easier to make an extension for Firefox as well. So the same extension works on Firefox, Chrome, Chromium, Vivaldi, Opera, and theoretically other ones as well. But for now, those are ones that have been tested and do work. So that's cool about the release. The other thing, you see it says celebrating 15 years. Well, the application was first launched in 2003. So it's been 15 years. I haven't been working on the project for 15 years. I'm about like 10 years. I've been on it for 10 years. But the application has been around 15 years. And we're celebrating it with a new release and a new website that technically is not live yet. So viewers of this show will be the first to see it, especially the live stream. If you've not been to the live stream before and you're interested, you should totally do that, because I do things like this and other things But the next version of the website for UGIT will look like this and be a lot nicer. So, yeah, that's coming soon. Anyway, UGIT 2.2.0. Up next in the show is personal finance applications. I know, exciting, right? There's 3 applications that were updated this week, and, well, close enough to this week, so I'm going to count it. KMyMoney, Scrooge, and GNU Cash. So first up is KMyMoney. KMyMoney and Scrooge are both made by the KDE community. Not necessarily the KDE team or whatever, but the community in general, yes. Using the KDE stack and stuff. Anyway, so KMyMoney was ported to KDE Frameworks 5, and it includes many bug fixes. Frameworks 5 itself is important because that's the frameworks that the applications are using for the Plasma 5 transition thing. Anyway, the improvements have been a plethora, improving generating money reports, added support for a lot more currencies, and added support for logarithmic axes in report graphics. I don't actually know what that means. That last part, I don't know. But it sounds cool, because who doesn't love a logarithmic axe or whatever? That sounds fun. Anyway, also updated this week was Scrooge. And Scrooge is a fun name. Some people make fun of the KDE naming scheme where they have K whatever. Not all applications do that. So Scrooge, I love that name. It's fun. It makes a reference to Ebenezer Scrooge. Good. Anyway, moving on. This application updated with a lot of cool things. So you have a tip of the day thing that's in a clickable section of the page of the window, so it gives you tips every time you open it, which is good because it's finance tips, and that's always helpful. They've made a lot of cool improvements to the Qt version. They've also made some important performance improvements. So you can now resize columns, the visibility of columns, modify the like automatic category structure for like payee systems. And it's made improvements for a lot of different performance enhancement stuff. But what's really interesting about this particular update is that it's added support for cryptocurrencies. I mean, there's been a little bit of cryptocurrencies already in works, but now they're at over about 100. I think it's 100, maybe a little bit more, of support for cryptocurrencies that you can manage via Scrooge. That is really cool. So, you know, cryptocurrencies themselves are pretty complicated. Personal finance, pretty complicated. Might as well have one manager that does it all. Fantastic. Next in the personal finance of the week is GNU Cash. Now, the update for GNU Cash is actually just a development update. So the latest version of the stable release is not out yet, but the beta release has improvements to the Alpha Advantage API. So that's pretty cool, and it gives you more preference control and things like that. Overall, it's just a basic, it's just a development build, so it's recommended to not use it in production, but if you want to give it a shot, go ahead. Anyway, personal finance in Linux, if you didn't know you could do it, now you do, and I would say enjoy, but it's personal finance and management and stuff, so like, good luck, I guess. Ranger 1.9.0 was released this week, and if you haven't heard of Ranger, Ranger is a Vim-inspired file manager for the command line. It has a minimalistic curses interface with a directory hierarchy, and it has a file launcher called Rifle, which is Rifle is really cool. What it does is it when you try to activate a file, it'll automatically detect what programs you want based on the file type, and then launches that program for that file. So that is a really cool idea. So overall, they've added some interesting updates, but like, it's mostly I wanted to show you that like it is a new update, but I wanted to show you that if you haven't heard of Ranger, it's a really cool application, and it makes terminal file management really easy to use. Instead of having to CD everywhere, you can use Ranger, and it's great. So they've added some like terminology-based image previews, and they've improved some a setting for like font height and font width, so you can make it look a little better in the interface. But overall, it's an application I want you to check out because I like it. And if you want to manage files in the command line, then it's a fantastic option to do so. MusicCube 0.40.0 was released this week. And it is a terminal-based audio engine and music player and audio server and a bunch of other stuff, audio library management. And anyway, so MusicCube, really cool, written in C++. It can be set up as you can play music through it. You can browse your audio library with it. You can set up a streaming server with it. So that what's even cooler than that is that they have an Android app called Music Droid, spelled the same way the music is with a K. And you can have your computer. You can do a server or you can do like your own local computer and have the streaming server activated and have your Android app connect to the streaming server. That is awesome. So your music can be stored on single individual location, but accessible in multiple ways. Like, fantastic idea. I've actually used other music players in the terminal before. And that, more specifically, CMUS was the one I used the most. CMUS, I use that the most. But MusicCube actually looks kind of better. Because, not necessarily just better, but it's better in the sense that it seems more accessible. It's better laid out. It's got, like, the album, artist, genre, like, browsing. You can browse by artist and have tracks based on that artist. You can have just all songs listed. If you want to use the music that is incredibly minimalistic, incredibly fast, and tons of shortcuts, and you're okay with using the command line and doing that, then check out MusicCube 0.40.0. CPod 1.14.0 was released this week. And if you haven't heard of CPod, You might have heard of the previous name called Cumulonimbus. Okay, so hard. Good job changing the name to CPOD. Much easier to say. Thank you. Cumulonimbus, or CPOD, is a podcast app player or management tool for Linux. It is based on Electron, which is not good for some people, but I'm okay with that. It's fine for me. It has a lot of interesting features. There's a few things that are coming that you know they need to improve, but overall they've made a lot of improvement since the past time I looked at it, since it was called Cumulonimbus, including changing the name. So, if you haven't heard of it, you should definitely check it out. In fact, if you're using any particular Linux, you can just try out the app image. Oh, they also have a deb file, but the app image is available for pretty much every distro. So if you haven't given this a shot, feel free to go download the app image and let me know what you think. Also, let me know what you think about the name change. I think they can make it a little bit better, because CPOD is kind of like not really obvious what it is, but it's definitely an improvement. So the KDE Slimbook version 2, the Linux Ultrabook, was announced this week, and it was announced. And it's what's really cool about it is that there's a lot more powerful hardware. It's cheaper than it was previously. That there's actually, I mean, it's sold in the UK and in Europe. So the cost for US conversion is a little bit more than the listing, but you know that's understandable for where it's coming from. But it's a pretty cool looking laptop. It looks kind of Mac-ish like thingy, but you know, to be fair, Mac computers do look very good, so I'm okay with that. I think it looks good. So the Slimbook comes with a crisp full HD 13.3-inch screen. It has a dual hard drive bay, very cool, because you can support for a second hard disk. It has support for M.2 drives. And like multi-boot, by the way, is a good option for that second bay. It has a bigger multi-touch touchpad than the previous version, and it supports all kinds of different gestures and clicks. Slick backlit keyboard, and a powerful Wi-Fi antennas. So typically, if you're not familiar, most laptops' Wi-Fi antennas are terrible, and their distance is atrocious. So the fact that that's a focal point sounds kind of silly in the sense of like it's Wi-Fi, everybody has Wi-Fi, or every device has Wi-Fi, but most laptop Wi-Fi antennas are garbage. So it's really cool that they're putting effort into that. So thank you. And it has three full-size USB ports, and it has one of those three is a USB Type-C port. So that's pretty cool. Anyway, if you're interested, check out the link in the show notes for the KDE Slimbook 2. The Mycroft Mark II is on Kickstarter, and it has almost 2 weeks left to go. Way beyond their their goal that they wanted. They've got $246,000+ pledged for the goal of $50,000 that they wanted. So that's pretty cool. And if you've not heard of Mycroft, it is an open source voice assistant, comparable to like Amazon Echo or Google Home. And Echo is the Alexa device. So this is a really cool project and company and all that stuff. If you haven't heard of it, it's a really interesting idea, and they've been around for a little while. Like this is the version 2. The Mark 1 is this one, and this is like, I don't really like the face thing. This was like a constant face thing, and it was like a robot type. It looks like a Wall-E sort of. And this is a screen, just an LCD screen, and you can have this face on it if you want to, but you can also just have display content like a clock or whatever. Way better than the previous version. So thank you for making an update to the Mycroft and making it look good. Looks like something I actually might want to have in my house. I would prefer the outer casing to be black, but still, it's very nice looking. Good job there. The other thing about it is that they've improved the performance of it, based on the reliability of the voice detection and what you're saying and what it understands you or not. They've improved the quality of the speakers and the mics. Well, it's one speaker, but there's six mics. That's pretty cool. So it'll detect you from as long as you're in the room somewhere, it'll be able to listen to the activation call. They're also working on another version that has a camera built into it, so you can have video calling and stuff like that, or camera plus the display, so you can have video calling. Now, because this particular device is focused on privacy and data independence, the camera feature will have a little switch that you can block the camera so it won't actually do anything if you don't want it to. That is cool. I like that they're looking into that or taking that into consideration. It also, because it's privacy-based, does not store any voice data that you've activated by doing anything, doesn't have any ads or anything while you're using it like some of the other ones. And what I think is really cool is that this particular version is not available yet. They're kickstarting it. It'll be somewhere at the end of the year. By the time they do that, this change will have been made. They will be using Mozilla's Deep Speech and Open Voice projects to make the Mycroft responses and functionality even more better than it was. So that is fantastic, because if you haven't checked it out, Mozilla's Deep Speech and Open Voice projects are very cool. And you can actually contribute to that project very easily just by going to a website and then reading something or marking it, whether it's accurate, somewhat like what someone said to what you read. That's pretty cool. So you can contribute to the Deep Speech and Open Voice projects. And then Mycroft using that, fantastic. So Mycroft Mark II, can't wait. Did not want the first one. Totally want this one. So, yeah. Mate 1.20 was released this week, and a lot of exciting things came with this one. The supports for now high DPI displays and dynamic detection and scaling, which means that they have it where if you install Mate 1.20 on a laptop or desktop that has support for high res display, it will automatically change the display, the DPI display for your monitor or whatever. So if you have high res, it will just detect what it should be and then change it to that. Fantastic. It doesn't have fractional scaling. That's where it does 1.3% or times increase. But what it does do is modify the icons for the high res as well as the fonts, and the fonts do have fractional scaling. So when you change it, you can have the images and icons will get bigger, but one particular size bigger, and then the fonts can just fluidly change to whatever you need it to be. That's fantastic. Because unfortunately, if you have full fractional scaling, that'd be even better. But to mitigate that slight issue, the fonts, probably the most important, in my opinion, to be big enough to read them, So, very cool. They also added support for DRI3 and XPresent for Marco, which increases the frame rates in games significantly when you're using Marco. Marco is the window manager for Mate, if you're not aware. There's also a compositor called Compton, which works along with Marco. Marco now supports dragging to quantent window tiling. What does that mean? Anyway, quadrant. What I meant to say was quadrant. All right. Which is the quarter, a quarter panel up here. So you can have a window that's a quarter of the screen. And it'll work in every corner automatically. You just move the window to that corner and bam, quadrant tiling. They also added support for the global menus idea. They've already had a global menu sort of, but this one's the actual full global menu, release. So that's fantastic for anybody who really wants to have Global Menu. It's good to have. The Monte panel has been improved a lot as well with status notifier items and just in general performance improvements. They've added bookmark support with GTK 3 locations. Monte Terminal now supports background images. So you can have an, instead of like an opaque color or whatever, you can just change it to an image instead. I don't really understand why you would want to do that, but you can, and that's great. They also added some solarized themes and changed some key bindings. They've added a ton of new features and really basically like a full overhaul of the document viewer for the desktop. In particular for this, they've improved support for visually impaired users, which is fantastic because, you know, accessibility is heavily overlooked. Pardon the pun I just used. Heavily overlooked for most developers, so it's really good that they took effort into doing that. Monte themes have seen significant improvements to fully implement all style classes exposed by the GTK 3.22 release. And the archive viewer now has support for 7-zip or 7z archives. Great release for Monte 1.20. And if you want to check it out, you can check out Solus. Solus already has support for it. And if you're, you know, that's the most polished release of 1.20 right now. So if you just want to, you know, play along with it, just play around with the latest version, check out Solus. And otherwise, you know, it'll come to your distro in time. So yeah, Monte 1.20. This week was announced the Plasma 5.12 release. And this is the first LTS since 5.8, so it's about a year and a half or so. And it's available right now if you want to try it out on KDE Neon, Kubuntu 17.10 via Backports PPA, OpenSUSE Tumbleweed, and Arch Linux. Now, what's in 5.12 is a new slim kickoff menu, which is the main menu that you get with the default layout of Plasma. They've made it where you can move around the tabs at the bottom so you don't have to have all of them at the same time. And you can remove it so that you can only have, if you only want the applications to show, you can move everything else and just use that. So that's pretty cool. In the background you see in this video, you're seeing that the Plasma 5.12 promo video, I happen to have made that. So if you want to check it out, the link is in the video description. Anyway, up next is that they also had a notification text selecting that's improved. Discover has a lot of improvements, both in performance, stability, and some UI improvements, like some it's consolidated, make it more streamlined, and also fix some little quirks, like, for example, the update button scrolled away if you scrolled down the list of updates. That was kind of annoying, but they fixed that, so now it's like it's a global menu, so that's really cool. Speaking of global menus, they improved it heavily. So one of the things that I didn't like about the previous 5.12 or the 5.11 version of Global Menu is that you have to go and activate a process and some other things to make the Global Menu work. Now when you enable the widget, it just automatically works. So fantastic. So that's a much better thing. So also they've added some jump lists so that you can modify the right click context menu of any application in the task manager. And then for example, in Dolphin, you can add new ones pretty quickly, just drag and drop. They've added media controls for the lock screen, folder view, spring loading, which is really cool. If you haven't checked that out, definitely check out the promo video and find out what that is. And they've improved system settings, so it looks a lot more cleaner, a lot easier to use, more simple in some cases as well. And much more, including improving performance, stability, especially in like boot speed, so you can you can boot your computer in a much faster percentage in comparison to like 5.8, which is about 30% faster. So if you're an LTS user of Plasma, you should definitely upgrade. It is worth it. So Plasma 5.12. CoreOS was acquired by Red Hat. The announcement came recently, and this is an interesting, very. Okay, it's very interesting to the few people that it affects. not so much for everybody else, but I'm going to just give you like a brief explanation of why this is interesting, and you can decide whether or not that if you care or not. Anyway, so first, Kubernetes is an open source system for automating deployment, scaling, and management of containerized applications. That sounds like a ton of buzzwords, and it kind of is, but it's also relevant to what it is. Red Hat OpenShift is an enterprise-ready and comprehensive Kubernetes platform. CoreOS is a software company that provides solutions like Tectonic, which is an automated hybrid enterprise Kubernetes platform, and Container Linux, which is a lightweight Linux distribution that provides automated updates for optimizing and running containers. So it makes a lot of sense that CoreOS would be bought by Red Hat anyway. Like it just makes sense because it's essentially investing in their own Kubernetes platform by adding CoreOS to that platform. And CoreOS is kind of like one of the biggest competitions for Docker, and Docker's like the mecca sort of thing of this server container platform structure. And so it's really good for Red Hat to acquire CoreOS because it provides a lot of extra tools and utilities for their services, their offerings. If you're interested in any of that, check out the links in the video description. And let me know what you think, and let me know if you like this kind of stuff as far as like being on the show. I'd be very interested to see what your response is to that. So anyway, CoreOS acquired by Red Hat, pretty big deal for the people that it affects. Up next in the show is Canonical Corner, or like wherever all the Ubuntu stuff goes. Ubuntu 18.04, LTS daily builds, are now going to be using Xorg by default instead of Wayland. And this makes the most sense because I don't know, they haven't really said that it's like if the daily builds change is going to be like permanent for, but probably will be, probably. Because it's an LTS and they don't really want to risk running, you know, people trying to install it and it not work, or because Wayland doesn't work on their hardware or something like that. No, they did kind of compensate for that in 17.10, but it's just to play it safe. It is an LTS, so it's a good idea for them to do this. Ubuntu LTS could also come with a Snaps apps pre-installed, so that would be interesting. It's not actually, they haven't really said for sure it's going to happen or not. It's just something that someone has suggested they might consider, which would be interesting if they were to do that. Because Ubuntu Mate was actually already the first distro to provide a snap by default. So this would be cool. This would be like a somewhat new thing. And I'd be really definitely interested to see what the applications they chose, if they were to do it, would be. Ubuntu Mate was like a command line tool. So it wasn't that like extensive. But I would expect Ubuntu to be more ambitious for it. Although being the first ever to do something is definitely ambitious. So that sound is weird. Anyway, moving on. So, Meltdown Inspector are actually delaying the next release of Ubuntu 16.04.4, which is the next LTS release of the previous LTS, or the current LTS. So this is, if you want to look for like the details, the show notes has a link to this particular article that says, tells you everything you need to know. But essentially what it says is that the Meltdown Inspector vulnerabilities are keeping the release coming because it's slowing down the process, and they need to make sure it's accurate before they release that new ISO. Like, they've already got the update available to people who are using 16.04, so it's not like you're worried about that, getting that or anything. It's just they want to make sure that the next release of the full upgrade release of the 16.04 LTS is ready with that in mind. So anyway, Canonical Corner. OpenSUSE 15 had some announcements this week, and also some tumbleweed news as well. The first thing is OpenSUSE 15 will bring Plasma 5.12 and Wayland to Leap. Now, this is interesting because the Plasma 5.12 has a lot of Wayland support. It's not the default. It's not the focus yet. I will be soon, but it's not now, because of the LTS. But it is interesting that because the Plasma 5.12 has Wayland, Leap will be updating pretty soon, and they're going to use 5.12 for Leap, which will include Wayland support in Leap. So that's pretty cool. Also, Plasma 5.12 is currently now in available in OpenSUSE Tumbleweed, which is the rolling release version of OpenSUSE. And I've actually tried this particular version of Tumbleweed just a couple days ago. It is nicely done, and it's very stable, and everything that I was hoping they would include, they did. So that's great. Now, the one interesting thing is that OpenSUSE Education branch from it's an education based version of OpenSUSE for schools and universities and things. It seems like this is going to be ending with the next version of Leap. So they're not going to it'll be after Leap. So like Leap 15 will come out. OpenSUSE Education will still exist at the time, but then at that point they're trying to decide whether or not they're going to end the project. But if they do, it's not that big of a difference because it's essentially like a respin or maybe remix of OpenSUSE for educational purposes. But if you install those applications and packages from that project into just basic OpenSUSE, then you pretty much have OpenSUSE Education. So it's not really a necessary thing. It's nice to have in some cases, but I think OpenSUSE Leap would be a better choice for schools and universities if they wanted to go that route, because Leap is a lot more active, and the fact that it's based on Tumbleweed with snapshot system, really cool. I should do a video about the Leap and Tumbleweed structure, because it is a really interesting system, and if you haven't checked it out, then either go look in the video descriptions for these links for these topics, or subscribe, make sure you don't miss that video where I talk about it. Anyway, OpenSUSE Leap 15 and Tumbleweed Plasma 5.12. Linux Driver Management 1.0 was released by the Solus project recently, and the Linux Driver Management provides a core library and some tooling to enable a quick and easy enumeration of system devices and functionality to match devices to packages and drivers. Essentially, it makes it easier for the system to automatically install and select various different drivers and manage them throughout the system without much interaction with the user. So that's that's a fantastic goal. LDM 1.0 is no longer tied to package management specifics and is instead designed to be used as a library, so you can include it in other distros, theoretically. I don't see why I wouldn't be able to. Developers can integrate into their software centers and driver management systems to provide detection capabilities, so you can have automatically detect the drivers needed for any individual software center. So that's fantastic. The initial release is designed to support the end goals of Solus 4. So Solus 4's software center will probably be the first, almost guaranteed, the first version or the first software center to include support for the Linux driver management. And it's going to provide detection for NVIDIA cards, printers, Logitech devices, YubiKeys, all kinds of stuff. So that is fantastic. And I am very happy to see this being made, because this is pretty much a game changer for, just general distro, compatibility, but like device detection. And it's just like, it just increases the ease of use that it is to become a Linux user, because your hardware will be detected and things can be done with that. So that's fantastic. Good job, Solus team. And thank you. So Linux Driver Management 1.0. This week's episode was so jam-packed with GNUs, there wasn't much time for Linux gaming. There were about a dozen topics for Linux gaming that couldn't fit into the show, even though I really wanted to put them in. So this got me thinking. This situation kind of happens a lot, so I was hoping I could get your feedback for a possible solution. I was thinking about making a spin-off show for Linux gaming, and I was wondering, what do you think about the idea? Are you interested in gaming? If so, are you interested in watching a show about Linux gaming GNUs? I'm very curious to get your opinion, so please let me know in the comment section. Now let's get to the Linux gaming news. Well, the ones that I could fit in. The Nintendo Switch has been hacked to run Linux. So they found an exploit that allowed them to make the Switch run Linux instead of the default Switch operating system. That is fantastic. Now, this was done by the Fail Overflow team, and they posted this information on Twitter. They didn't really give much information, but it's really interesting and it's really cool. They announced that this was going to happen within a couple months ago, and it was pretty quick that they were able to do this. So the interesting thing about this, not only is it just really cool that it can work, but they made a claim that's, you know, if true, is really amazing, that the exploit that they used is not possible to patch by Nintendo. If that's true, then that could be huge. I mean, good or bad, I don't know. Huge for like a homebrew app structure, software development for Switch in the future. Because if this exploit is not patchable, this could be like, pardon the pun, game changing. So, next up, and last finally in the show, is the latest update, the 1.41 patch of Rocket League. Now, if you've ever watched this show before and ever seen me mention gamings on this show, and more than likely I've mentioned Rocket League, I've talked about Rocket League quite a few times. Probably one of my favorite games ever, but the newest update brings a whole new season, new crate to like get cosmetic stuff, which is admittedly, in the beginning, I thought the crate thing would be stupid because all the cosmetic stuff would be like ridiculous and who cares. I like it now. I do. I have a little bit. Anyway, doesn't matter. New crate, new black market decals. If you're not a fan of the game, you probably won't know what that means, but it's really, really cool effects and animations and stuff for your car. Anyway, doesn't matter. Whole new car. The other thing about it is that it's coming with a new tournament mode, so you can like create your own tournaments in like your own community, which is going to be cool. So when that happens, if you play Rocket League, let me know. Anyway, so I was thinking about doing some streaming for the channel and some gaming streaming stuff. Like not only just I do the live stream for the show, but I also do like I want to do some like gaming streaming as well. And I was thinking, what better game to start with than Rocket League? So if you're interested, let me know in the comments below or in the live chat, or send me a message on YouTube, and maybe I'll do like a YouTube stream or a Twitch stream. I don't know, whatever. If you're interested, let me know. And yeah, Rocket League. Thanks for watching this episode of This Week in Linux. If you like what I do here on the show, please hit that like button and be sure to subscribe. If you'd like to support the channel, you can become a patron by going to tuxdigital.com/patreon. Or you can order the Linux is Everywhere t-shirt by going to tuxdigital.com/linuxiseverywhere. Or if you don't want to type as much, you can go to tuxdigital.com/shirt. Just a reminder, this show is live every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern, so join us in the live chat room to discuss all the latest Linux good news each week. Thanks again for watching. I'm Michael Tennell with Tux Digital. And as always, keep using, learning, and enjoying Linux.